What up, what up, what up, everybody? This is the Dr. Football Ultimate Patriots Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Dennis Tien, recording remote from my real live medical office in Dedham, Massachusetts. Joining me as always, the CEO of Hedgebetter at Hedgebetter Studios in Braintree, Justin Fine. Justin, what is going on, my man? How are you this morning?
I'm good. It's, you know what, almost the weekend. Looking forward to it. Weekend without football, one of the very few we've had recently.
Preview of things to come, yeah. Man. Preview of things to come. The most boring time of the year. The weather sucks. There's no football. It's just rough time of year.
It is. But you know what? We said that last year. And look, here we are at the end of another season. So the time, it does fly, you know?
Oh, it flies. It flies. Absolutely. Yeah. All right, well, let's get into it. We got a great episode today. We're going to give you guys one good hour or so on everything NFL. We're going to go through everything going on in Foxborough. There have been a few developments with this coaching staff and some of the hires they brought in. A couple other new stories coming from Foxborough. We're going to talk about those two massive games that happened on Sunday, and then we are going to bring it around the league and look at some of the coaching hires and give them grades. Because all the teams except for the New Orleans Saints have now hired coaches. So we're going to get into that. And then if we have time, we're going to talk a little bit about this big game coming up in 2 weeks. It feels like an eternity, these 2 weeks, and there's only one game left. But that's basically what we got, Justin. You ready to get into it, my man?
Let's do it.
Before we even begin, I got to start with this. To me, this is the biggest story in the NFL right now, Justin. Hopefully you can hear this. Yeah. Oh, did you hear Liam Cohen break that down, Justin, and try to pander to the Jacksonville fans with the Duval? That was the most cringy moment in recent NFL.
It was so cringy. Like, you know, like I felt like I was watching like a movie, like a comedy movie. Like, and it was, you know what I mean? Like, it was just like a cringy, like, oh, like you could just feel the whole audience laughing at that guy collectively, like as he said that, like in person and whoever was watching on TV. Like, I can't imagine anybody watched that with a straight face and was like, oh, that's our dude.
He said it like it was like a line in a horror story or something. Like, he's like, Duval, like he was trying to like scare, or like it was just the way the tone, the inflection was just totally wrong, like totally non sequitur, out of context. So if you're upset about the Mike Vrabel hire and you're like, you know, wanting the Patriots to have done more of a search, and it's like, hey, listen, I will take Mike Vrabel over that any day of the week, as bad as you know, as some, I don't want to say as bad, as much as I understand people wanting a process, like if that's what's waiting for you out there, give me Mike Vrabel 1,000%.
Every day. Yeah. I, you know, I feel bad for Liam Cohen. I think he had a nice little gig, you know, as an OC, and I just don't think he's head coach material. Maybe he'll prove me wrong, but just like everything I see from that guy just tells me that not only is he not a leader of men and not fit to be a head coach, but he picked probably the worst organization, or not one of them, to go to for his first head coaching stint.
Well, do you think, I agree with you, he comes off like he is not a leader, and he comes off like he is just one of these guys that is probably a coordinator, but not a coach.
Right.
And I think the fit with Trevor Lawrence is something you really have to question, because like, as much as Trevor Lawrence might hate this, like, I think the way you get the best out of Trevor Lawrence is with someone that's like experienced, old school, hard, rigid, kind of like a Belichickian type model. And you bring in this young, goofy guy that's never done the job before. Look, we were all laughing at Nick Sirianni a few years ago, and he's had the last laugh on all of us. But I'm sorry, it is a terrible look for Liam Cohen on that first impressions that he made on the football viewing world. And I mean, I heard a lot of people say Jacksonville 0-17 this year. I don't think it's going to be quite that bad, but I definitely don't think it inspires confidence.
Definitely not. I mean, you know, I look at that organization in that roster, and it's like, I understand people wanting, you know, to pair Trevor Lawrence with an offensive mind, someone that they consider to be like a cutting edge, you know, offensive coach. But like, That organization needs so much more than just somebody to come in and inject like a little creativity into the offense and in Jacksonville. Like they are lacking so much. And honestly, Trevor Lawrence, I think he's a coach killer. I think he is going to have Liam Cohen packing his bags, looking for another gig in a year or two. I really do.
Yeah. I mean, Trevor Lawrence is totally a coach killer. And you know what? I do have respect, Justin, for what Liam Cohen did in Tampa Bay.
Right.
And I think that he probably is a good play caller and he might even get that offense to be productive. But we've seen throughout the league, it takes so much more than that to really make a winning program, a winning operation. And I just think that, you know, there is so much, I think, to be concerned about for that Jacksonville team right now.
Yeah, totally agree. There's way more that needs to be dealt with. Like you said, I think they need discipline. I think they need culture. I think they need actual players on that defense and some members to round out that offense. Like, there's a lot to be desired other than just an upgrade in play calling.
Because there is, independent of Trevor Lawrence, there actually is a lot of talent on that Jacksonville team. Like, they hit on Brian Thomas. They have some weapons on offense. Evan Engram is a great tight end. Taken how many high draft picks in the last few years. They have some studs on defense. There are building blocks in place there for right. that franchise.
Yeah, but they need a little bit more. And again, I think the biggest thing, if I had to say what the biggest need of the Jacksonville Jaguars is, it's culture and discipline. And I don't think you get that with Liam Cohen.
Yeah, you definitely know. And you don't get that with Duval. I just can't stop watching it. It's like watching a, I don't know. It's like watching a horror movie.
It's like, especially with the face he makes too. It's like he seems so unsure of himself as he's saying it.
Yeah, totally. How making yourself famous isn't always a good thing.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's get to the situation in Foxborough, Justin. And there have been some developments in the Patriots situation that I think it's worth for us to mention. I'm going to start with this take about what's going on. Last time we recorded, we talked about Mike Vrabel. They had just hired Josh McDaniels. Over the last eight days or so since our last episode, they continue to fill out this coaching staff. And what I want to say is this: look, you look across this league. Situation counts. I mean, this year, I think more than any year in recent memory proved that. You know, you look at what Sam Darnold did in Minnesota. Look at what Baker Mayfield did in Tampa Bay after being picked off the scrap heap. Look at what Saquon Barkley has done, where we all thought he was not the generational running back, and he's proving he is, because why? He went from a dumpster fire in New York to a real NFL franchise with good players around him. So the situation you put good players in makes a huge difference for what you get from those players. Yep. And I think that's relevant to Foxborough, because I'm looking at what the Patriots right now are doing with building a coaching staff around Drake May. And we haven't seen what players they're going to bring in yet, but we're seeing what they're doing with this coaching staff. And I love, love, love the way this team has filled out this offensive coaching staff with experienced coaches. I love the Doug Marrone hire.
Yeah.
He has coached in two different NFL cities. He has had some success, and he is absolutely a worthy offensive line coach. The Patriots have had seven different offensive line coaches in the last 7 years. So they have not had any stability at all. Marrone brings that. I love the Thomas Brown hire. This was a rising star, up-and-coming guy in Chicago mm-hmm. who comes in, has experience coaching that Bears team, has experience with the young quarterback, comes in as a passing game coordinator and offensive assistant. I think that's a great hire. And obviously, I love the Josh McDaniels hire. The Patriots now, I think, have four coaches on their staff that have been head coaches at some point. And I think that is hugely beneficial to, first and foremost, Drake May. You're surrounding this guy with experienced coaches. He is not going to have to worry like he did last year about what kind of guidance he's getting from the locker room. And I mm-hmm. think that is a huge first step towards getting the most out of Drake May.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, when you have guys that were literally former head coaches, you know, as position coaches, I mean, that's just showing the type of depth you have in your experience. I think it also sends a message too. I think, you know, that obviously you got to figure that Vrabel had a big hand in bringing a lot of these guys in, but I think it's a clear message from the Crafts in this organization that their whole experiment last year with new up and comers, you know, guys that didn't have a lot of experience, it was a very failed experiment and it left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouth. I think they're sending a very clear message that the one thing we're not going to be this year is inexperienced.
Yeah, 100%. And I think the Crafts definitely are saying that they're done with this. And I would also say this, Justin, like, I think it's a good sign when you look at the investment they're making in the coaching staff. One of the real issues around this franchise has been not spending money on players, not making moves in free agency. And I do say, I'm wondering now, are the Patriots and the Crafts going to approach free agency and talent acquisition in terms of players with the same degree of aggressiveness they just did to the coaching staff? If they do, I think that's a really good sign.
Yeah, my gut tells me they are. I mean, look, I think this is an organization that's sick of losing. They're sick of needing to rebuild. They want to be rebuilt and they want to be competing. They're sick of being inexperienced. They're sick of having instability. So I think, you know, for them, they're rounding out their coaching staff, making sure they get good experienced guys on that roster that can help get the most out of these players. And now I hope they turn their attention to rounding out the roster itself. And look, I just can't see them throwing in the towel when it comes to bringing in talent this offseason. I really think that they're going to make an aggressive bid, not only in free agency, but maybe in trade as well, and then round it out in the draft. And they have a lot of opportunities and they have the tools to do it now. And you have a quarterback, you got a coaching staff that people will hopefully want to come and play for. So the pieces are there.
Yeah, the pieces are there. And I think that it really comes down to the mindset, and clearly they're showing that they're going to be aggressive this offseason with the way they approach this coaching staff. And
yeah,
that's a good thing, because I think that Patriots fans do not want to be sitting here, you know, in June and saying we have $100 million in cap room again.
Right.
The Crafts are not going to be able to continue to expect the same level of support and fan interest if they continue to not invest in this roster and in this team. I mean, and this offseason, I think, is really where the rubber hits the road. You don't have an excuse anymore. You have your coach, you have your young quarterback, and you have the cap room. So you have to go out this year and be aggressive. And I think that's what they're going to do.
Yep, totally.
Let's talk a little bit, Justin, about the draft and the early approach to the draft. I'm seeing mocks already, and I think the real interesting story this week was actually out of Tennessee, holders of the number one pick, where their new GM, whose name escapes me right now, made some comments to the effect of, we're not passing on generational talent to just simply draft a quarterback. And I thought that was interesting, because I think a lot of us were hoping that, similar to years past, that whoever's at the top of the draft is going to jump to take a quarterback, even if they're not really worthy of that top pick, and that a generational player such as Abdul Carter, Travis Hunter, might fall to the Patriots. What are your thoughts right now on where this draft is? If the Titans don't take a quarterback and they do take Abdul Carter, who I think most people think is the best player in the draft, where does that leave the Patriots with this number four pick?
I mean, I don't think it changes much, because I think if you're the Patriots, I think, at least in my mind, I want them to go out and take the best offensive lineman available. That's kind of where I stand. I think there's a bunch of good wide receivers that you could bring in free agency. I think you've been so off base with your judgment of wide receivers in the draft in the past that I look at it and I say, bring in a position that has a fairly decent success rate when drafted at the top of the first round, right? More often than not, you see the first round offensive lineman pan out, at least be serviceable players, maybe not generational players, but serviceable players. And I think this team needs a lot of help on that offensive line. Like, I mean, you know, we talked about like a Will Campbell from LSU. I believe the guy Mbowe, it's eluded me where he's from, but I mean, you got a couple of really good tackles that I think this team could use. So I really hope the top of the draft doesn't affect it at all, because right now, none of those guys are projected to go there.
Yeah, I think, Justin, look, this is what I would say about this whole situation, which is if the Titans do take Abdul Carter, I actually see that as opening a door for the Patriots, because lest we forget, the same pattern has played out now for I don't know how many years in the NFL, where someone is going to fall in love with either Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders.
Yeah.
And nobody in their right mind thought the Colts were going to take Anthony Richardson at number four. And they did. They traded up and they drafted him. Nobody thought Bo Nix was going at 10, right? Everyone thought he was a second round pick. Right. And Denver fell in love with him, traded up, and took him. Most people thought Trey Lance was going high in the draft. But as an example of a team falling in love with a quarterback and aggressively trading up to get them. So this trend continues to happen in the draft. So my point is, if the Titans and the Browns do pass on quarterbacks, I guarantee you there's someone out there after the combine and all the scouting stuff, some franchise out there is going to fall in love with either Shedeur Sanders or Cam Ward, and it's going to open up the door for the Patriots to trade back and get some kind of yield for that pick and still walk away with the top 10 player. So I don't think it's a bad thing if the Titans do that.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's if the Patriots can get their guy, you know, a few spots back and there's still a good quarterback up there, I mean, 100%. I mean, look, you got the fourth pick right now. The two quarterbacks seem to be kind of set in stone in terms of one and two, and that's obviously Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward, right? You may have them in reverse order. But so really all you need is the Titans, like you said, one team to not take a quarterback ahead of the Patriots. And that opens things up because, like you said, if one team doesn't take a quarterback, you got a lot that could fall to you. There may even be teams that would be willing to trade up for like a Travis Hunter. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's not, and I don't even think you were just limited to trade ups for quarterbacks in this draft.
Yeah, no, 100%. Because Travis Hunter might well be the best or second best player in this draft,
right?
And someone's going to fall in love with him,
right?
And I think those opportunities are going to be there to trade now. If you're the Patriots, so I don't see it as a bad thing, you know, if the Titans and the Browns don't take the quarterback, and you know that would certainly go against the trend in the league, which is, you know, everyone rushing to take quarterbacks even if they don't deserve to be took at those top three spots. But if it does happen, I think the Patriots still, I think it actually almost plays to the Patriots' hand. Like you look at teams like the Raiders, is a great example. Maybe the Jets, even though it's an in-division trade. I mean, someone's going to want to move up and grab one of these guys.
Yeah, totally. And if you're sitting there going, hey, I got my eyes on an offensive lineman that's going to be there at 5, 6, 7, that's a great spot to be in.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't see what's wrong with Will Campbell. Everyone's down on this guy. Like because he has short arms. I mean, he's a football player. I mean, how many times are we going to make this same mistake in the draft where we let these guys that are great players slide because they don't have all the measurables, or vice versa? We take a guy that isn't a great player and he comes up to the top of the draft, but he never was productive in college. I mean, it's the same mistake happening over again. I like Will Campbell.
Yeah, I do too. And it's a position of need. I have to double check this, but I'm pretty sure that offensive linemen have like the highest hit rate in the first round.
Yeah, they're up there.
So, I mean, you know, you talk about wanting to make the most of the pick and getting a safe pick. I think a nice offensive lineman would do you very well for your young quarterback.
To me, best case scenario is you walk away with Will Campbell, but you walk away with him at like 7, 8, 9. And you pick up a few draft picks, someone pops up because they fall in love with Shedeur Sanders or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm totally okay with that as well.
Okay, Justin, let's move a little bit. I wanted to talk a little bit about this one story that popped up this week. There was some reporting about Jerod Mayo not going quietly from the Patriots organization. Did you see this story?
I did. Yeah. It was interesting.
What were your thoughts on this? Because I'm really intrigued by what Jerod Mayo is going to do next. We talked about it last week a little bit. I don't believe he's taken any job. And I'm just like, I'm wondering where this guy's career goes from here. And I think that for him, if I'm Jerod Mayo, like go take a job as a linebacker coach, rebuild your career, and stay out of trouble. Like, I feel like by opening his mouth and maybe going the route of like lawsuits or pointing fingers, I feel like you're actually playing very much into the people that detracted and questioned from you the whole time where you were here. You're almost validating those questions around you. I think it's intriguing to see what Mayo is going to do next.
It's super intriguing, but you know what? I got to say, you know, from the very first day that Gerard Mayo took over, we said this, he almost had this unjustified sense of self-worth and confidence, like a little bit of hubris, just almost arrogance, right? Arrogance might be the word that I would use. And it doesn't shock me that after getting fired, he wouldn't be taking accountability for what happened here in New England and looking to rebuild and move on. It doesn't shock me that he's trying to put the blame somewhere else, say that his firing was unjust, this and that. It actually kind of seems to be par for the course from everything we've seen from Gerard Mayo for the last year, from being honest.
Yeah, it really does. And like, to me, Gerard Mayo is always right now going to be the guy that just kind of was handed a job he didn't deserve and really kind of stabbed Belichick in the back to get it in a very, like, I don't know, undesirable, the way that didn't look very good is, I guess, what I'm trying to say. Like, that's what Mayo is to me. Like, honestly, like, Mayo, I don't think he got the job under really like genuine, sincere circumstances. I think he was gifted the job from Kraft for really reasons that probably relate to Kraft's lack of judgment. And I just feel like, you know, for this guy to come in now and be pointing fingers at people, dude, you had 4 or 5 years of coaching experience and you were gifted a head coaching job. Yeah. It went predictably disastrous. Like, it's time for him to just zip his lip and get back to putting his nose to the grindstone and rebuilding his career, not sitting there pointing the finger at Kraft, pretending like you got done dirty. Yep. In fact, you're the one that was stabbing Belichick, the guy that gave you your first opportunity, in the back to even get where you were.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, the guy should just be super grateful the fact that he even got a head coaching job and can put on his resume that he was the head coach of the New England Patriots. Like, that's way more than he deserved. Did you hear the story? I saw this the other day. The story about him playing cards on the plane.
Yeah. On the way back from Arizona.
On the way back from Arizona, right? That the GMs and the other, you know, the coaching staff and management and every, you know, all the higher brass at the Patriots organization was appalled that after the loss to Arizona, instead of watching film, you know, talking with staff, he was playing cards with players on like the plane ride back. Like, I think that's like an inside glimpse into what exactly the Gerard Mayo experiment was. And it was an inexperienced guy who was not taking accountability, who didn't really understand how to course correct what was going on here. And all of those things culminate in him being terminated after his first year. And when I hear stories like that, it's very tough for me to sit here and go, it's unjust to fire Gerard Mayo after year one. I think it's very deserved.
Yeah. And I think one of the questions is like, was this guy really a super hard worker?
Yeah.
How many of these coaches are like obsessive workers, you know, in the office at 6 a.m.
A la Belichick.
A lot of other ones, like even Josh McDaniels is a great example. I'm sure most of the coaches in the league are like that. And that's really just because it's a self-selecting process. The only way you even ever climb that ladder is if you have that kind of personality where you put your nose to the grindstone and you're willing to work your ass off to distinguish yourself.
Right.
Gerard Mayo never had to do that.
Nope.
He never had to do that. And I think that when he got to the top, clearly it looks like he really wasn't that kind of hard, obsessive worker that was totally willing to sell out to find the answers to the problems that were facing this team. That Arizona story is really just a snippet into that. I'm sure there's 100 other examples from people on the inside. And look, honestly, Justin, the more I hear about this guy, how he got the job, what he did when he had the job, how he is conducting himself, things coming out now that he no longer has the job, I am just so glad that he is no longer the head coach of this team, because this was really, with him, really was a clown show from day one. And this franchise is just so much better off not even having to deal with him.
So much better off. And again, we haven't even had a year of this new coaching staff, but already just in terms of my like prospects, how I feel about this team, so much better going into year 2 of the Drake May era with this new coaching staff than giving Jerod Mayo and Covington and Van Pelt another year to clown show it up, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to miss like having to try and convince myself that, you know, Mayo knows what he's doing when it's obvious that he doesn't, you know what I mean? From day one, it was so obvious that he just was in way over his head. And you want good things for this franchise. You want good things for Drake May's career. You're trying to almost believe or buy into this guy in spite of the evidence he's giving all of us to the contrary.
Yeah.
And I just look, I'm so glad that we don't have to do that. Like the coach we have, Mike Vrabel, we don't know what he'll be, but we know he at least belongs in the role that he's been given.
He does. And one other thing I want to say too, is, you know, you talk a lot about player development, right? In a team like the Patriots, a young team that's really been struggling with player development, right, for the last couple of years. And, you know, we talked about last year, it's almost like a chicken or the egg argument, right? The lack of experience in the coaching staff made it difficult to fully evaluate the talent on the roster, right? The lack of talent on the roster made it tough to fully evaluate the coaching staff. But this year, I think you go into it knowing that you have solid, experienced coaches, right, that are going to be doing a good job at what you need them to do. And I actually think it gives you a much more accurate view into the talent that you have in the player development, because you don't have to sit there and watch games all season going, well, is this guy just being held back because he's got the wrong coach or he's not getting enough player development? Like, these guys are going to get what they need from this coaching staff, and it's going to allow us to accurately judge our roster and our talent moving forward.
Yeah. And there's no question that, like, on that issue where the crafts came down on that, they clearly pointed the finger at the coaching. I mean, Elliot Wolf is still here, whatever role he does have, you know, the coaches are all gone. There was obviously some disconnect with the player development, but it would not shock or surprise me if one of these guys that we're just also sure is a bust actually, you know, or even a couple of them ends up actually being a decent player in this league.
Right.
Now that we actually have real coaches that know how to use them. I just think last year, clearly, there was a major, I don't know, inability to develop these guys.
Yeah, totally. And again, you know, when you have inexperienced players that need developing and inexperienced coaches that need developing, you got the blind leading the blind.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. So let's see what happens. You know, like, yeah, we all think Jalen Polk and Javon Baker and all these other guys, Caden Wallace and Layden Robinson, we think they're all busts right now. But hey, we're putting them in now to a completely different culture, completely different coaching staff. Let's see what Doug Marrone gets from those linemen. Let's see what, you know what I mean? Let's see what the new coaching staff gets from Javon Baker and Jalen Polk. Might be a pleasant surprise.
Exactly. Yeah. So no, I'm very optimistic, and I at least feel like we have the right people in place to get the job done.
100%. So much better off as an organization. All right, Justin, anything else about the Pats? We're going to move on to talking a little bit about those two games from Sunday, which I know is kind of the top story this week.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, man, let's get right to it. I'm just going to say this. Let's start with the Bills Chiefs. I watched this game like it was a Patriots game. Yeah. I was rooting for the Bills like I was rooting for the Patriots in a game like this. I was yelling at the television. I was upset. I walked away from that game saying I wasn't going to watch the Super Bowl. I think I'm walking back from that take right now, but I was just so upset at the way that game shook down. And look, I know everyone wants to blame the refs. There were definitely bad calls in that game. I felt like every questionable call went to the Chiefs. I felt like several spots were terrible spots. It just seemed like the refs were trying to give every break to the Chiefs. All that said, the real reason the Bills aren't in the Super Bowl is because Andy Reid and Steve Spagnuolo pantsed Sean McDermott. No question about it. That was the biggest factor why the Bills lost that game on Sunday. And it's just a real shame that another opportunity passes by the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. There's a lot going on there, a lot going around about the questionable reffing and some of the calls that were made. And you know, you can give merit to that. I think it could have been a factor. I don't think it's the deciding factor. But look, I've been saying this about the Bills. I said it all year long. I said, look, they look great in the regular season. I am not changing my mind. until I see it in the playoffs. And you fall short again to the same team that has taken you out 4 out of the last 5 years. And you just have to wonder, what do you need to do in order to overcome like that hump, right? Like, do you have to wait till Andy Reid's too old and he retires? You got to wait till Travis Kelce's gone? Like, do you got to wait for Mahomes to get injured? Like, what does this Buffalo team need to do to get over the hump? It almost just seems like a cruel joke at this point. But the Chiefs, you got to give the Chiefs credit, because even though they may have gotten some calls, they capitalized on every situation that they needed to. They made big plays when they needed to. You know, that second touchdown run from Mahomes, you know, I was listening to something the other day. Gregory Russo, the defensive end for the Bills, right? He said they didn't run that play all year. They did not run that play. He said, we studied every single play that the Chiefs ran all year. They did not once run that, which was a misdirection where they pulled the guard and it made it look like they were running to the left. And then Mahomes bootlegged out to the right. And that was the first time they've ran that play all year. And that's playing chess when the other team is playing checkers. Like Andy Reid ready to draw up a play that nobody's seen all year when you need it to score. Like, that's the difference maker in these games, is you just have a coach who's a step above and you have a quarterback who's just a slight step above, I think.
Yeah. And to that point, how about throwing to Samaje Perine, who I think that was his first reception of the year, with the game on the line and Buffalo still clinging to a hope that they're going to, you know, get the ball back and potentially steal this game, only needing a field goal. And you throw it to Samaje Perine on this like trick play where you clear everyone out to one side of the field and you sneak Perine out across the field to the other side. And he's wide open for an easy first down. Every single person in America should have known the Chiefs were going to throw the ball in that spot. Yeah. And yet somehow Sean McDermott still didn't know. So credit to Andy Reid for having the guts and the brains to do what made sense, which is throw the ball and be aggressive in that situation. But then the stones to throw it to a guy that had never, not even caught a pass for you all year in that spot. I'm sorry. That is guts. That is aggressive play calling. That is great coaching.
It is. And like, you know, you look at this Chiefs team, like this Chiefs offense just keeps finding ways to plug and play. I mean, you know, you got guys like Justin Watson catching touchdown passes, right? Like, you know, they don't have their best weapon. Like they lost Rashee Rice. Like they just find ways to make it happen. They're just more clever than you. They're more disciplined than you. They're more prepared than you. It's very reminiscent of the old school Patriots, like, which is in fact one of the reasons why I don't want to hate on this Chiefs team. It's like, I obviously don't want them to surpass us as a dynasty, but by the same token, I have to respect what they're doing, because I feel very nostalgic, like watching the old Patriots days, where it's just like, this team is just better prepared. They're better coached. They have a better quarterback, and they're going to find ways to beat you. And that's what they do.
100%. And like, they are so reminiscent of the Patriots dynasty. And like, look, a lot of the things that people are saying about the Chiefs right now, I mean, people said about the Patriots for a really long time, well, they get all the calls and it's like, it is just so hard to beat that Kansas City team because of everything you just illustrated. They're so well prepared. They're so well coached. They have so many ways that they can beat you. I mean, there is not one player on that offense, I think, that is like, you know, would be considered a top caliber NFL weapon, right?
Yeah.
But they have the quarterback and they have a coach that designs plays, that gets the ball to the open guy, a quarterback that distributes the ball to the open guy. I mean, this is like Brady Belichick, like 101. Brady never had really much of that either. And they still found ways to score points, to win games. The Chiefs just know how to win. It's why, as much as I wanted to pick against them last week, I couldn't. It's why, as much as I want to pick against them in the Super Bowl, I'm not going to, because they just find ways to win. I'll end this with this, right? Like, all year long, haven't we been saying the Chiefs haven't scored 30 points? Giants, Patriots, Chiefs, only three teams that haven't scored 30 points. Yeah. Well, what do they need to do to get to the Super Bowl? They need to score 30 points against a good Buffalo offense that hung 29. That's exactly what they did.
Yep. And one other thing too I'll say is, you know, there's layers to this, right? You know, I've heard people talk about this, and I think it's totally true. You know, talk about two important positions when in a game this close that can be the difference maker. The first is Keon Coleman has been virtually useless this year. He has not lived up to the hype. I mean, I think he may be a good receiver. He may have potential, but the guy did not live up to the hype. And I think it's I think it's funny that you passed up on Xavier Worthy. And you took him, and Xavier Worthy comes and scores a touchdown on you, right? Keon Coleman virtually does nothing. Other thing is, you know, you look at what the Chiefs did. Trent McDuffie, a two-time, all-pro guy who is one of the best cornerbacks in the league. Like, the Chiefs traded up with the Patriots. Right. Took Trent McDuffie, leaving the Bills to take Kaiir Elam, who was the biggest liability on that side of the ball in defense. And it's like, you know, you switch those two things. Like, you put Trent McDuffie in Xavier Worthy in the Bills, and that could be a different game. So it's like, there's levels to this that go back multiple years. Exactly. So, like, this is, you know, you talk about the calls from the ref, you talk about this and that, but, like, really what went into that win on Sunday is something that's been in the making for years. When you talk about the slight changes to the personnel, the preparedness, the experience, like, all that stuff, that all went into that win on Sunday.
Right. And how about just the fact too, Justin, that, like, Travis Kelce, right? He has been underwhelming all year.
Yeah,
but much like Gronk at the end of his career, he has that ability to turn it on in the postseason when it really counts and become a weapon again. What did he have? Like 8 or 9 catches on Sunday? And it's just unbelievable. This guy that we all think is cooked and can't do it anymore. And then when it really counts, he finds that next level and is able to do it.
Yep. Totally. Totally. I mean, you just got to take your hats off to the Chiefs at this point. I mean, you know, I don't like them, but I respect them and I appreciate watching them.
What did you think, Justin, about some of the, one of the things I thought that was another place where Reed really outcoached and Steve Spagnuolo really outcoached Sean McDermott was the fact that, I mean, look, we all know Josh Allen is a great runner of the ball and a great quarterback sneaker. And the Chiefs have on the other side of the ball a weapon in Chris Jones that is one of the best interior defensive linemen in the league.
Yes.
The Chiefs went into that game and they were not going to let Allen pick up first downs with the quarterback sneak. And I think the Bills kept going to that play, kept going to that well. And the one or two times they did get it, they really eked it out. It wasn't, and they also got rejected a few times. That quarterback sneak play was not working the whole game.
Yeah.
And then when you have the game on the line, 4th and inches, the Bills are up 22-21, chance to score and put the game more or less away. They go to that quarterback sneak play again. It more or less gets stuffed. I know some people feel like he got it, but I just thought that was another example of good coaching and just using Chris Jones, putting him in position to say, we're not letting Allen eke out these first downs. You're going to have to find another way to pick up, to move the chains.
Yeah, totally. I mean, is the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. Oh. So it's like, you know, it just didn't seem like that was the move. It didn't seem like that was working for them. And one other thing
Running the ball the whole game too. Like, they were actually able to run the ball with James Cook, but they kept going back to this Allen quarterback draws.
Yeah, exactly. They got a little too, I think the moment got a little too big. They lost who they were because that's not the Bills. The Bills are not a tush push team, but the moment got too big and they tried to do it. One thing that I do want to point out on that play about the refs, because you brought it up, and obviously that was a big controversial call in the eyes of many, you know, saying, oh, the refs, it's fixed. The play before that, on the Dalton Kincaid catch, right, where it looked like he might have gotten the first down, but they marked him short, right?
Oh, that was a terrible spot.
It was a terrible spot. But here's the thing. On the next play, on that tush-push play, right, two of the refs had different spots, right? One of the guys had him having enough. The other guy marked him short, right? The guy who had him marked as having the first down was the same guy who marked him short on the play before, right? So if you say it's a conspiracy, I think that totally that totally, you know, rules that out, because if that was the case, you would expect the same guy to be making their calls. The guy who ruled him short on third down wouldn't be the guy who's giving it to him on fourth down, right? So I think like it's a bad call, but I don't think it's intentional. I don't think
it was an egregious call. Yeah. Like, I mean, some people have said it was egregious. Like, no. He obviously had the first down, and like I've seen, I'm sure you have too, all the memes and the videos on Facebook with the line, and look, he probably did get it, but it was razor thin close. And I think the larger story is the fact that the Chiefs were consistently able to muck up the middle of the field and stop Allen from picking up those easy first downs in a way the Ravens were not able to the week before.
Exactly. And you know what? I think I think if you're the Chiefs, you're going to have to take that same energy into New Orleans in 2 weeks, because you're going up against the kings of the tush push. Right. So, yeah. You know, you're going to need to be able to replicate that in 2 weeks. But yeah, they were able to stop Josh. And they were just at the end of the day, it was a very close game. Like, Josh Allen still played well. I mean, that heave on fourth down where he was, you know, the cornerback blitz came in, like Dalton Kincaid should have caught that ball.
Oh my God. Right? Easily.
So, I mean, you know, I can't put the blame on Josh Allen because he played well. But by the same token, it's just, look, it's not a 1v1 game. It's a team sport. And at the end of the day, that team, that organization, that coaching staff just finds a way to own the Bills when it counts.
I thought Allen outplayed Mahomes for sure.
Sure.
I thought he definitely played well enough to win. The biggest thing was again the play calling from the Bills, and I thought they took the ball. They were very passive in sometimes the passing game they called, and I thought that they really almost took the ball out of his hands, like not being aggressive, throwing the ball downfield when I did feel like that was generally working for them.
Yeah, I mean it was. You know, you can go back and blame the Bills front office for not equipping the Allen with the weapons that he needed to go. I mean, you know, you can't tell me that if that Bills team had a true number one wide receiver, that could have been a completely different game. You know what I mean? They don't have a number one wide receiver. They got Khalil Shakir, Keon Coleman, like Curtis Wallace. Samuel. Like, it's like, you know, they're really, Josh Allen made the most with what he had. He made lemonade out of lemons, but it just wasn't enough.
It wasn't, Justin, but they still scored 29 points on the road. One of the three best defenses in the league. So, I mean, if you're going to point the finger at Buffalo, I really think you really have to point at that Buffalo defense and really giving up 32 points to a Kansas City offense that frankly hasn't been that good all year, and giving up two huge scoring drives in the fourth quarter in the biggest spots where Buffalo had the lead, had the chance to get the ball back, couldn't do it.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, look, it comes down to the same old song and dance. You know, Bills fall short at the hand of Mahomes and the Chiefs. And look, I'm going to say this again because I found myself saying it after the last four seasons. How many times can this Bills team suffer in just completely demoralizing defeat, get so close, yet be so far, and bounce back the next season and do it all again? Like, at a certain point, you wonder when the will of that team gets broken. In, you know, five straight years of this, four of them at the hands of the same team and the same player.
But Justin, I don't think it matters, and I'm going to tell you why. Because they have Josh Allen. It's the same thing with the Ravens. They have Lamar Jackson. Yeah. They're going to win 11, 12, 13 games next year. They're going to win their division next year. And they're probably going to end up losing again in the postseason, because that's just what they do. But I think as long as they have Josh Allen, I mean, look, if they can go out and win 13 games or 12 games with this team, where you just said it, they really don't have anything on offense besides Josh Allen and some, like, you know, scrap pieces, and they're still able to be what they were, there's no question about it. They're going to be in it again next year. It's just you said it all season long, and you're right. It's going to be, can they actually put it together in the postseason?
So that's my thing, though. When I say, will this team fall apart, it's not that I expect them to win like seven or eight games next year. Like, I still expect them to win a good amount of games. I expect them to be one of the top teams in the league. I expect them to make the playoffs. The question is, when they get put in this situation again, are they just sitting there going to themselves, holy crap, here we go again, right? Like, yeah. how do they go up against Joe Burrow or Patrick Mahomes or one, you know, or someone next season and have the confidence that they're going to get over that hump after five straight years, you know? So it's less about what I think will happen to them in the regular season and more so about that mentality that kind of sneaks up on you when you get to those big moments, like, oh, geez. Is it going to be the same old story?
I mean, look, the Bills played with all the pressure on them on Sunday, and the Chiefs really didn't. I mean, that's the reality because of the situations of both franchises. So you're right. What did you think about the worst call in this game? And I want to talk about Sean McDermott in a second. But before we get to that, one thing we have to mention, worst call in this game was the Xavier Worthy catch. That was, if I was pointing at one place where I thought the refs really screwed Buffalo, that was not a catch. The ball hit the ground. The receiver never had possession of the ball. How do you walk away from that and give possession to Xavier Worthy? That was the one that puzzled me.
The only thing I can think of is the fact that I believe the call in the field was a catch. Right?
It was. That's right. So, call in the field. But didn't you think the ball hit the ground?
You know, I did, but it was also like a weird thing where it was like the ball hit the ground, but it also seemed like he had it trapped at a certain angle. I don't know. Look, I think if I'm being honest, it probably isn't a catch, but when the call on the field says catch, you know what they say, it has to be clear and irrefutable in order to overturn it, right? So it's like if it's 51-49, technically they shouldn't be overturning that call, whether it's right or wrong, but that's kind of what the rules state, right?
Yep, I guess so. I don't think if the ball didn't hit the ground, I would have been okay with saying that the call in the field stands. But when you clearly see the ball hits the ground, which I think the replay clearly shows, at that point, to me, overturned, incomplete pass, moving on. Now, it might not have mattered. The Chiefs might have scored anyways. But I thought that was the worst call of the game.
Yeah, it was definitely a big call. Definitely a game-changing call for sure. But again, it's not that I agree with it. I just, you know, when you make the call in the field and then it's not 100% clear, it's tough to overturn it.
It is. Okay, Justin. So here's the real question for the Buffalo Bills. I walked away from that game and I said to myself, the Bills should fire Sean McDermott tomorrow. You very intelligently pointed out, well, if you do that, who's going to be the head coach? Who do you replace him with? Right. And the reality is there probably is no one better than him out there. Right. But what is the future of Sean McDermott in Buffalo after this loss?
Well, I think, you know, we've talked about for the longest time is Sean McDermott on the hot seat? Is Sean McDermott on the hot seat? I would be shocked if he is not coaching for his job every single game in the 2025 season. Like, I think all the pressure in the world is on this guy. All the eyes in the organization are on this guy now. And if there were still viable coaching options out there, I could totally see him being let go after this year. I think his saving grace is the fact that there is nobody better out there. And so if I'm the Bills organization, I think you're going into next season just with your finger on the button, ready to push it, ready to get him in the ejector seat out of there as soon as possible. The second you see something that isn't kosher, but I think he's coaching for his job and it'd be crazy if he isn't.
It's just one of those things where it's like, you know, you look across the league and you look at, I mean, Liam Cohen, right? Perfect example. Yeah. Would you rather him if you're the Buffalo Bills? Like where's the guy that's going to replace Sean McDermott and be able to get this team back into a near championship situation? And the reality is I don't think they exist. Maybe Belichick was that guy. They passed on Belichick. So who's available that you can plug in and get to the same place? It's one of those things where Buffalo is like stuck in a rock and a hard place at the highest levels against the best coaches. It feels like McDermott always comes up a little small. Definitely got out coached on Sunday, but at the same time, he's not a bad coach. It's kind of like having Kirk Cousins as your quarterback. It's like the same kind of thing on that same kind of level where like you have a coach, he's a good coach enough to get you there, but he's not a good enough coach to get you over the hump. What do you do?
Yeah, I agree. You really are in a tough situation. And again, the fact that you got slim pickings now, if you were to get rid of him, it almost forces your hand to say, we got to bring the guy back. But you know, with that being said, I think he's on notice, and I think the whole organization is kind of feeling the same way. I think they're feeling like, hey, the first chance that we get, if this guy screws up again, he's gone. At least I would hope that they would be at that point, because something has to change, right? You know, we talked about on that tush push play, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Yeah. Well, it's like, okay, well, let's apply that logic to this organization as a whole, right? Like, what, you just keep doing the same thing and you get the same result without changing anything. Like, that's crazy. So something needs to change. It's not Josh Allen. So The next logical place to look at is the head coach.
Yep, that's exactly right. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, what they do and how they position it. The other thing is, when you're making the conference championship game every year, it's really hard to hire a coach because you're 3 weeks behind everyone else.
Right. Totally. Totally. Yeah. So,
all right. Let's talk a little bit about the Eagles Commanders game, Justin, and be perfectly honest with you. I think there's so little to say about this game. I think it went out, on almost, I think, like we predicted. I didn't think the Commanders could handle the Eagles running game.
Yeah.
I thought Saquon Barkley would have a field day against that defense. He did. I thought the Commanders were just completely outclassed. I was really regretful the Lions didn't win, because I think it would have been a much, much better matchup if it was Lions-Eagles as opposed to Lions-Commanders.
Yeah.
The Commanders, obviously, wonderful run, great story. Jaden Daniels, great story. They weren't quite ready for this moment yet. They weren't quite ready for this stage, and they were just kind of outclassed by a much better team.
For sure, for sure. I mean, you know, we've kind of said it all year. On paper, the Eagles, I think, are the most talented roster in football, top to bottom, right? So, you know, going into that game, Jaden Daniels played, no matter how good, you know, they were coached, it just, they were behind the eight ball from the start. But you know, the one thing I'll say about this Philly team is, you know, you look, three touchdowns from Saquon Barkley, three touchdowns from Jalen Hurts, and everybody's praising them. Oh, they're so dominant. They're so this, so that. You're not going to be able to do that against Kansas City. And this Philadelphia Eagles team, their passing game has really been lackluster for the last couple of weeks, even dating back to like before the playoffs started. So if you think your game plan against Kansas City down in New Orleans is going to be to rush Jalen Hurts and Saquon Barkley for three touchdowns apiece, I think you're sadly mistaken. You cannot be one-dimensional to beat the Chiefs. So the same thing that's got everybody oohing and ahhing from this past weekend could honestly be the downfall in 2 weeks of this Eagles team.
Well, we said it 2 weeks ago, which is like, can the Eagles win, you know, with really almost no passing game, or just feeling like that passing game is still so out of sync. And I think we both agreed that they could get out of the NFC,
yes,
but could they beat Buffalo or Kansas City, you know, with a passing game that is clearly still struggling? And my answer to that is no, they can't. So like, yes, now this is the time where the Eagles are going to have to step up and prove that they can still pass the ball. And why can't they? They still have a lot of weapons. I mean, they still have AJ Brown. They still have Devonta Smith. They still have Dallas Goedert. Barkley is a great pass catching running back. So it really comes down to, can Jalen Hurts and those weapons put it all together and make production in the passing game? Because I agree with you, Kansas City's defense is too good, and I don't think they're going to run all over them the way they ran all over the Commanders.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. And you know what? I'm going to make my prediction right now, because I've been on the Chiefs, you know, since the end of the year. Coming into the playoffs, I loaded up on them to win the Super Bowl. I doubled down going into the AFC Championship game this past weekend, you know, Chiefs to win the Super Bowl. And I also bet Chiefs to beat the Eagles specifically in the Super Bowl. So, but I'm going to tell you, I think this is going to be the first Super Bowl victory for the Chiefs that they actually win pretty handedly. I think nobody's expecting it. The last, you know, the three wins they have prior to this were all grinded out game against 49ers, grinded out game against Philly last time they played. I just got a gut feeling that the Chiefs are going to win this game by two scores or more. And I don't think that's the popular opinion. That's obviously not what Vegas thinks, but it's just what I think. And I think what's going to happen is, I think Philly is a ticking time bomb. I think there's a lot of issues with that organization between the coach and the players and other players. And I think all it's going to take is for them to go down early or for them to make a little mistake. And I think that entire foundation is going to crumble right before our very eyes. And I could see them getting, you know, getting beat pretty handedly, but maybe.
See, I disagree. Okay. I disagree. I definitely have a hard time picking against the Chiefs, because how could you pick against the Chiefs at this point based on what they've shown the last few weeks? I mean, how many consecutive one score games now have they won? It's something like, you know, they've won like 15 straight or something like that going back to last year. I see this game as being the same. I see this being a close game. I think it's going to be a lot like Buffalo. There's no way in a game like that I'm picking against Reed and Mahomes. Now, I think the Eagles have the better team. I think they have the better roster from top to bottom.
Agreed.
And I think that they should be able to win this game. But there's that Mahomes-Reed magic. And this is screaming. The Chiefs are screaming. Team of destiny. They've been screaming it all year long. Right back from week one when Lamar Jackson throws a tying touchdown pass to Isaiah Likely and he lands out of bounds.
Yeah,
right through the Buccaneers game they eked out. Right through the Denver game in Kansas City with a missed field goal. They just keep finding ways to win. They're a team of destiny. I think it will be a very close game. But I just think Reed and Mahomes and Kelsey and the whole lot of them, they're going to find a way to eke it out. And I expect a close game, but I expect the Chiefs win.
Yeah. And you know,
rooting for the Eagles, right. I will be rooting for the Eagles, but I expect the Chiefs to win.
Yeah, I do too. I expect the Chiefs to win. And you know, I was looking at the highlights from their Super Bowl 2 years ago. And that Eagles team put up a very good fight. I mean, you know, arguably they very easily could have won. It came down to the wire. And this is, in my opinion, a much more talented Eagles roster than that team 2 years ago.
Yes.
But I just think at the end of the day, that Eagles team might be more talented, but that Chiefs team has two more years of experience in winning, in development, and just a proven track record of getting it done. Their confidence has to be through the freaking roof right now. So it wouldn't shock me if the Eagles kept it a close game or even won, but I'm going to go in the side of history and take the Chiefs, and I don't know. I'm going to make the bold prediction that the Chiefs win by two scores, but you know, we'll see.
I think this Eagles defense is a lot better than the defense from 2 years ago.
They
are. And like, if you really look at it on paper, the Chiefs should have a hard time scoring against this defense.
They should.
I mean, you know, they really should. I mean, this Philadelphia Eagles defense is really good. And they have players at every level that are disruptive. The Chiefs should have trouble. But what I think the elixir here is Andy Reid will scheme up a way to move the ball, to find some kind of play, a la last week, to get yards when it counts, to keep the chains moving. Mahomes will make plays when he has to keep the chains moving. And somehow they'll hang, you know, the 27 points or something they need to win this game. There's no question about it in my mind.
Yeah, and you know what, too, is this Eagles secondary, this defense is good enough that they can take Saquon Barkley and Jalen Hurts out of the game. They can load the box. They can bring the pressure, and their secondary is good enough that they'll be able to hang with this Eagles kind of downtrodden passing game. So I think that's going to be a big key, is can they take Saquon and Jalen Hurts out of the game and not get burnt too bad through the air? And I think they can. I think the defense is built for that.
Well, I think that's the key to the game right there.
Yeah.
Key to the game. If Hurts can throw the ball and they're able to figure out that passing game, then that's, I think, how the Eagles win this game.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, brother. So we were going to do coaching hires, but why don't we save that for a future episode, because there's a long offseason ahead of us and there's going to certainly be plenty of time to talk about that. So we'll do that next episode. You got any more final thoughts on this game or anything we talked about today, brother?
No, that's about it. Just, you know, unfortunately, we're left with the Super Bowl that I think nobody in America wanted. It's funny. Right. I think usually America is able to get behind one team or another, but I feel like outside of Kansas City and Philly, everyone in America just wants both teams to lose. They're like so sick of both organizations. But hey, we got it, and it'll be interesting. Hopefully it'll be a good game.
I mean, this would have been so much more compelling if Buffalo had found a way to, or even if Baltimore, you know, had found a way to win. This would have been such a better Super Bowl. I mean, to see Buffalo fans at a Super Bowl in New Orleans, going head to head against Eagles, it would have been so much better.
Yes, totally.
But we're left with what we're left with. It's still the Super Bowl. And, you know, like I said, I initially said I wasn't going to watch. Obviously, I'm walking back on that right now, but we will be watching. We'll record again next week. We'll take a little preview. We'll look at some of the gambling angles. Take a look at some of the coaching hires around the league, and take it from there. You have anything else you want to add, brother, before we wrap it up?
Nope, that is it.
All right, I want to thank everyone that listened to this episode of Dr. Football Ultimate Patriots Podcast. Have a great week. We'll catch you next week. Enjoy the Super Bowl hype, everyone.